If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing, Addy Oye Jr. Joining me is the Nitro Rifle himself, twitch.tv/Andy.
I'm gonna untime out.
No, leave him time out. He can wait to talk.
I was gonna bring it up. I was about to be like, yo, what's up, everybody in the KFGD, except for Sage Temple in chat, who's not watching this show because you came in reckless, Sage Temple.
You still watch, you just can't talk.
They were just like, hey, it was Kind of Funny Games Daily today. Like, is it happening today or not?
It's 10:04.
Yeah. It's like, you can wait 3 minutes for the show to start, Sage Temple, all right? Patience. Hey, have we ever failed you? Probably, but like, have we?
I don't think so.
Do we get it right 99% of the time? Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if there's not games daily, we tell you there's not games daily. Sage Temple. There you go. Andy, how's it going?
I'm doing fantastic, Buzz. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Very excited. Tunic reviews are now up. We didn't have time to do the review roundup because the reviews literally went up like 4 minutes ago. But we do have the Gamescast review. Do you want to tell us your thoughts?
Yeah, Tunic is awesome. I put in a lot of time to it because the post game is just so good. Reminded me a lot of Death's Door, bless, where I just wanted to keep on finding the next secret, And holy cow, does it go deep. Because we talked about on the Gamescast that Janet was part of the Tunic Discord where all the other reviewers were kind of a part of and kind of just like it's set up in different chat boxes where it's like, level one, like here's where you can kind of like discuss with people if you need help, and then the post game section had a separate section. Holy shit, I thought this game had secrets. It goes way further than I would have ever thought it goes. Wow. It's really, really cool. It's a great little Zelda like isometric top down. You're a cute little fox and you're going on a cute little adventure, and then it opens up in a really interesting way, and the level design is fucking chef's kiss.
Oh. I had a blast talking to you guys about it yesterday. And of course, like, I believe, do we have a TikTok about that one going up?
Yeah. Should be Hell up yeah. right now.
Hell yeah. So if you want the mini review, go check out that TikTok. If you want the full review, of course, it is Andy. It is Janet. They're joining me and Greg, who haven't played. I've not touched the game. Greg has played a little bit of it, and we have a really great conversation about that. But Andy, enough about that for now, because we got a lot to talk about. It is a jam-packed news day. Today's stories include Elden Ring selling astronomically, a big Starfield news roundup, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, like we were just talking about, a new Kind of Funny Games cast is up right now as of 6 minutes ago, and it's our Tunic review. Andy and Janet have both played through the game. They joined Greg and I. We talk all about it. You can catch that right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. And then speaking of Gamescast, review season is in overdrive. You think people keep saying that review season is coming to an end.
No.
It's coming to an end.
Shot.
No, it is speeding up. It is getting crazier. So crazy that next week we have two review episodes of Gamescast dropping next week. So keep an eye out for that.
I went to Target, blessing, and there was still like all of the review season decorations out that people were still buying like in droves, and they're still sold out everywhere. All the review season candy, little things that you can get, it's all over the place.
Blessing. It's that thing where like friends keep coming to me and they're like, yo, when am I going to be able to get the discounts on the low price review season candy and sweets? Because they think it's like Halloween, right? Where it's one day, it's done, cool. No. November 1st, I show up to the store, get that cheap candy. Ain't no such thing during review season. Review season keeps on rolling, Andy.
Absolutely. It keeps on blessing. Going. I mean, god dang, dude, you talk about like blessing. I am obsessed with Elden Ring. And you tell me you have to pull me away from that to go play a little game about a stupid ass fox. And I'm just like, sure, it's the job. I got to do it, right? And I'm like, all right, this game's fucking good, you know? Like,
see, for you, it's the fox. For me, it is like, oh, man, I'm so deep into Elden Ring. And now, like, I'm 80 hours in, you know, a few days ago I went and I finally beat it. But the only reason I did that, because I wanted to just spend time in that world and I plan to go back and spend more time in the world. The reason I did that is because I had a little voice in my ear saying, you need to kill chaos.
Oh, god damn.
You need to kill chaos. And so man, I was like, I guess I gotta go kill chaos. Let me tell you, right. I started, or I guess I finished level 3 yesterday, because I believe we can talk about it, because reviews went up a few days ago. And that game just keeps on getting me in. Like, there's something about the loop in that game, specifically, like, how it's the complete opposite of Elden Ring in terms of how gamified it is and how you're finding loot everywhere. And they give you access to pretty much every single build off the bat. And so, like, I'm mixing and matching. I'm pressing triangle to switch back and forth between two different builds. I'm having a great time, and it's like the perfect kind of decompressor.
I need to install it, Bless, because when I was doing all the demos for those first several demos that they released, you know, when you hit start, you'd hit the menu and you'd go to the screen where you eventually equip your dude with all of your cool stuff. And when I say dude, like, this is a dude, right?
Oh, my God.
You go to that Jack screen, you're like, here's this fucking dude, right? And it looks super clear. It was like, damn, this is past 4K. Like, the resolution looks insane. And you cut back to the game and it looks like it's 640p. Yep. Like, does it still feel that way?
Yep. Yeah, that's what I was telling when we did the review roundup on Monday. I was telling Tim that, like, when I first booted up the game, I had sworn that, like, I had either booted up the PS4 version on accident or somebody had rubbed Vaseline on my screen. Like, it has kind of that look to it where it's like, these textures are not as crisp as they should be. There's no way these cutscenes can be this bad. There's no way this dialogue can be like this stilted and this weirdly delivered. But yeah, it's all of that. But the gameplay is what keeps carrying me through. I'm having a blast playing that game. And so, like, I'm very excited to see. I'm excited specifically to see how Tim takes to it, because it seems like Tim's going to play it. And, like, part of me thinks it's a Tim Geddes-ass game. But, like, again, we'll see. Like, it doesn't have that, like, good Final Fantasy story. Like, that when I think of, like, a Final Fantasy 7, right? 7 Remake, or I guess 7 Classic, because 7 is a classic, right? It's not that, but it also is dumb as hell, and it's fun. And, like, I know Tim liked Devil May Cry, and it feels like the combat has that level of, like, you know, it's swifter than a Souls game, right? It's not that. It is kind of an in-between of, like, you're being methodical to some extent, but also you're hacking and slashing. You're just going off on enemies, and it's, like, it's a really fun time.
And you get them parries. The parry system is, like, I think, really good.
I think it did it.
In a couple of those boss fights, it feels really good to kind of spam it in a way that feels really rewarding. By the way, Tunic on Game Pass today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you can go check it out.
Had never been confirmed or denied that it was coming to Game Pass, and now it is, like, official that you can go get it right now on Game Pass. That's incredible.
That's fantastic. Holy cow, I didn't realize that. And then also Shredder's coming to the Game Pass later this week, which I'm very excited about. But enough about that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire, Fargo Brady, and Pranksy. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and DoorDash, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one, Elden Ring has already sold 12 million copies worldwide. 12 million copies worldwide. I'm pulling from Adam Bankhurst at IGN. Elden Ring is off to an incredibly strong start, as it has already sold 12 million copies worldwide since its February 25th release date. From Software and Bandai Namco shared the news in a press release stating that Elden Ring has sold more than 1 million copies in Japan alone and 12 million copies worldwide as of March 14th, 2022. Quote, much effort was placed into creating Elden Ring so that we could exceed the expectations of our fans worldwide, President and CEO of Bandai Namco, Yasuo Miyakawa, said. They continue, quote, In like manner, we will continue our efforts in expanding the brand beyond the game itself and into everyone's daily life. We'll continue to create enjoyment and fulfillment through entertainment so that we can come closer and connect to our fans around the world, end quote. For comparison, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, From Software's previous game, sold 2 million copies in 10 days. Bloodborne, which was only released for the PS4, sold over 1 million copies within 2 weeks of its launch back in 2015. Andy, 12 million copies is huge. Does this surprise you?
Absolutely. For a game that has kind of, or for a franchise, really, for a studio that has typically made games that are like hardcore, and it's going to take a lot of it's going to take a lot of dedication to try to get into one and to try to learn the systems and to try to get good at it. This is far and away way more than I would have suspected in that short of a time frame. As of 2020, the Dark Souls franchise in total, which is Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, and Remastered, sold 27 million lifetime. And we're talking about those games are all multi-platform, just like this is, and Elden Ring is almost half that already. That's a staggering amount of sales. I would have never expected that in a million years. I would have assumed maybe 5 million, maybe 6 million. That's like a really huge success, especially for FromSoft and kind of typically what they're used to. This is absolutely insane. And shout out to them for making a quality game that had enough people interested in it, right? And have, you know, brought in a whole new legion of fans. And I think Gene Park put it best yesterday. He was like, this is only going to continue because whenever you make a new fan in the Souls franchise, like, you stay there. You don't say, oh, I might check out the new one. No, you are there. You are dedicated. So, yeah, this is incredible.
And I think that translates to the stickiness of it because, like, you know, you're talking about, like, the you would have expected, like, 5 million, 6 million, which would have been huge numbers anyway, right? Yeah. And for the 12 million, you start to ask the question of how the fuck did we get here? And I think it is the thing of Bloodborne is a game that I think has only created more fans as the years have gone on. Like, it was just last year that we did our Bloodborne spoiler cast, right? Because I had gone through and played it for the first time finally and absolutely fell in love with it. Greg Miller went through and played it, right? You had played it the year before. And it seems like that game that is constantly getting people in, I'll also say the same with Sekiro and for the Souls games in general. There's this element of, like, I think the gameplay is just so solid and ages very well where you don't go back to an older Souls game and go, oh man, no, this feels old. This feels like dated. I think in some aspects, like if you played newer Souls games or newer From Software games, you might have some of that. But like, you know, between Bloodborne, Sekiro, and then the new Demon Souls that's put out by Bluepoint, right? I feel like there have been a lot of opportunities for people to jump in and get either familiarized with the series or fall in love with the series. And I think Elden Ring, you know, you look at it as that, but you also look at it as a new IP. And with new IPs, it's like, okay, well, certainly this can't sell as well as like a sequel, right? Certainly this isn't going to sell as well as something if you put a number two on it, because with sequels come just way more people getting into it because you're coming off of the hype of the first game, a built-in audience, and then new audience coming in for the sequel as well. Elden Ring, I think, has that benefit of it being a new IP technically, but also being this thing that if you're a From Software fan, you know what you're getting, and it feels like a sequel, right? It feels like I love Dark Souls, so I know I'm going to love Elden Ring because it is the next step of that. I think it is that also combined with the fact that, like, it is open world, right? It is exploration. It is, it's a bit more approachable than Souls games, even though I wouldn't say that from the gameplay purely, but I would more so say that from the setup of you don't get hardlocked at one boss if you can't defeat a boss, right? You can turn another direction and go explore elsewhere and find other shit to do. I think that then allows for more people to feel a bit more comfortable and feel a little bit more like they understand what this game is. Because, like, we were having the conversation on PS Love You this week of, like, is Elden Ring niche, right? Is it this thing that only that speaks to a particular kind of audience? And my argument was that, no, it's not niche. I think it is mainstream. And I think that is because with Elden Ring, I can make the comparisons to something like Skyrim or something like The Witcher, where it's an open-world action RPG in genre. Like, yeah, it's Souls. Yeah, it's a bit more, like, obscure in some of its mechanics, and it takes a little bit to get into, and it takes a bit more effort to kind of, like, get into the flow of playing the game. But in terms of genre, in terms of setup, if you understand how to play a Skyrim, if you understand how to play an action game, you understand how to play an open world game, it is way easier, I think, to get into an Elden Ring and roll with it. And I think that's speaking to way more people this time around.
It's funny because I think that it's kind of come full circle where at first a Souls game operates in a very difficult capacity where you aren't really familiar with this sort of style of game. I've said it a million times, but like Danny O'Dwyer said it best. The games aren't super difficult necessarily. I mean, they're tough, but it's just that you suck at them at the beginning because you haven't really played a game that requires this level of patience and understanding that you can't just go in there and hack and slash like a Devil May Cry or a Final Fantasy video game. So, like, it's interesting because I think it's come full circle where FromSoft games have influenced so many different genres and games out there in the last 10 years, where we've started to see this combat style being taken from a lot of other devs over the past several years, because it is so solid and it does work. We've seen Assassin's Creed sort of take that style from it, which is a massive multi-platform video game. We've seen Jedi Fallen Order take a lot of influences from it.
I mean, and even now, God of War 2018, right? Like,
right.
That had that kind of redefined its own combat, I think, based a lot of what Souls was doing, because it was that God of War originally was very hack and slash. It was very Devil May Cry. It was very fast paced. And God of War 2018, I think, took its time to go, all right, how do we slow this down? How do we make this more methodical? Which I would say is influenced by those classic From Software games.
Yeah, and now it just, and now I think audiences are just a little bit more willing and able to hop into these FromSoft games and go, oh, okay, this is something that I'm a bit more familiar with now, as opposed to maybe hopping into a Souls game 8 years ago where there still isn't a whole lot of it on the market. There isn't a whole lot of that fighting style on the market. I think now people are just sort of becoming more accustomed to it. You know, it's almost like having a 3D shooter back in the day using two dual sticks. Like, that was something new that people had to grow accustomed to, and now every 3D shooter on console, you use your two sticks to control it. So I feel like it's kind of just a play style that's become a little bit more ubiquitous among the community. This is amazing.
Coming off of that thought, right, I think that leads right into the question that the Sheep Whisperer writes into patreon.com says kind of funny games and says this: yesterday afternoon, Bandai Namco and From Software announced that Elden Ring had reached the impressive sales milestone of 12 million copies sold worldwide. So this is, one, a brand new IP of a still relatively niche genre; two, has gotten rave critic and consumer reviews; three, has broken 12 million sales in 2 weeks, a sales milestone that took Dark Souls 3 roughly 3 years to achieve; and then four, it's on top of everyone's game of the year list. How do you think this is going to affect the industry as a whole? With this unprecedented success, do you think we'll either see even more Soulsborne copycats flood the market, or do you think Elden Ring's unique take on an open world design will finally revitalize the open world market? Thanks for all the hard work you do. Thank you, Sheep Whisperer, for your thanks. I think this is an interesting question because I think it does come off of what you're talking about right here, right? Where the combat design in Souls feels like it's becoming a bit more ubiquitous in combat in general, right? And I think, you know, again, Cheap Whisper uses the word niche, right, defining the genre, right? And, like, you know, Elden Ring is a new IP. And I think the further and further we go, the less and less niche it feels, especially when you look back at the games that have taken influence, right? You mentioned Star Wars. We literally just talked about Final Fantasy Stranger of Paradise, right? Which has more of that take on combat, at least in the form of, like, you know, you find they're not bonfires, but, like, they're basically bonfires, right? You find the bonfires on each level you go through, and the combat is a bit more methodical and thought out, right? As opposed to, like, the pure character action that you'd expect from a Devil May Cry or a traditional or old school God of War game, right? I think you're seeing that transition because it's starting to, I think, speak to people a bit more, right? I think there's, and I think From Software, it's kind of the most extreme version of it, which kind of speaks to the greatest, the most hardcore fans of it. But when you look at that spectrum, right, of, like, character action combat and how you can kind of operate in that space, I think people do like the idea of being able to have the time or think about their moveset, right? Like, in Devil May Cry or any faster character combat game, I feel like if I tap square, right, if I tap square, square, triangle, my character is doing 100 flips. My character is going all over the place. And that is fun for me, right, when I'm playing a Platinum game or I'm playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. I'm going through, I am tapping the combos, and half the time, I don't know what combos I'm executing. I'm just executing them, right? And I'm just having a fun time doing it.
You don't really worry that this next attack, taking the risk to do it might be the death of me, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Whereas, like, in Elden Ring or in From Software games in general, I think there's more of the idea of, I know exactly what attack I'm about to do. I know exactly, like, the timing I'm going to put into this and how long it's going to take for my character to wind up. And I think there is an amount of strategy that makes that gratifying and makes that fun. And I think it's just a different way to do things that you're seeing more people take on to you because you're not seeing as much of that in the space. And I think you will see a lot more of that. But for you, Andy, do you think that Elden Ring selling 12 million is going to make other developers reflect in the future and go, okay, what do we learn from this? How do we jump on this bandwagon? Or, like, how do we take influence from this?
I feel like doing so might alienate a lot of fans of those genres. And I think that just because a couple of game reviewers on the internet talk about, you know, open world fatigue, those games still sell well. Like, I don't think Assassin's Creed in their future open world games will ever look and feel. There might be some, you know, some influences here and there, but I don't ever see a future Ubisoft open world game that isn't that go isn't talk to this NPC with the exclamation points. Like, I don't ever see that happening. I think that there's still a large, massive, dedicated fan base for those games, and I think doing so would alienate those fans in a similar way where I saw a there was a lot of like talk over the past couple of days on the internet about what has happened to these Ubisoft games, right? And there was a screenshot from like Assassin's Creed 2 where it's, you know, hide in the crowd to get to assassinate the target, you know. And then there's a second screenshot from, I believe, Odyssey, I'm assuming. And it's, you are like in a Souls encounter fighting Surtur, or what's that god? Kevin probably knows what the god from
I think you're right.
From God of War Ragnarok.
Surtur?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
And it's like,
got it.
What happened here in this franchise where suddenly we're doing kind of like, you know, here we are doing stealth missions.
It's not hiding. A stealth game anymore.
Yeah, like what kind of happened to this? So like we've already seen influences there, right? But I think going even further, unless they start to do some sort of, you know, let's branch off. This is a different sort of Assassin's Creed game, similar to how we saw, you know, 2D side-scrolling Assassin's Creed games. I think it'll influence a lot of developers that don't have these sort of set in stone franchises. I don't think you're going to see changes to games like that. I don't think you're going to see changes to anything that's really established. But I think developers making a brand new IP might start to take more influence from that and might start to have these more kind of like what I would say obtuse. So it sounds like a pejorative, but I think that those are the type of open world quests that I really enjoy. I love stumbling upon something that I wasn't aware was going to be there and go, oh shit, you were an NPC I talked to a while back. And like having all those sort of dots connect, I feel like is some of the most satisfying stuff that I've experienced with FromSoft games. I don't think we're going to see large sweeping changes over a lot of these established IPs though.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. It reminds me of when Breath of the Wild came out. And for me, I remember in 2017 playing through Breath of the Wild and feeling like my world was rocked in terms of what I wanted out of a video game, right? Specifically an open world game where, you know, playing a game that made me explore, playing a game that didn't feel bogged down by icons, playing a game that just let me get lost and go any direction and finish it whenever I want, right? Like, those were systems and mechanics that I felt were very fresh at the time. And coming off of Breath of the Wild, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play another open world game again unless it's doing things like this.
Right.
And then like later on, I played, I think it might have been Ghost of Tsushima that eventually came out and made me go, oh, you know what? Never mind. Like, it's just, these are just different genres of games, basically. Where Ghost
what a
Tsushima,
game, huh? What a game.
What a game. Like, fantastic game, right? And like, Ghost, I think, does take influences from Breath of the Wild here and there, right? But like, it's also a very different type of open world game. Horizon Forbidden West is another one where playing it, you know, I am very glad that Horizon Forbidden West isn't Elden Ring. I'm very glad that Horizon Forbidden West isn't Breath of the Wild, because those do satiate different different wants and needs for what the gameplay loop I'm looking for is, right? I think there's nothing wrong with that icon map, right? I think there's nothing wrong with going through an activity list and going, all right, what am I going to do today? Today I wanted to go through the melee pits and I just choose to do that and have fun with it, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Today I'm going to go through these quests and this list of side quests and like get these rewards from them, right? I think there's something you said about doing that type of open world game, and I think Horizon Forbidden West, in my opinion, does that extremely well. I think that has some of the best of that type of design in there. But then
I think it's easy to call those sort of missions like chores or like really laborious and stuff like that. But I don't ever feel like those are the worst things about the games. Like in a lot of those moments, I find satisfaction in, let me put on a podcast and knock out some side quests.
100%.
And I want to just level up. You know, there's a bunch of just random exclamation points that I've been meaning to knock out. But that's where the games can sort of feel inconsequential, because maybe you're talking to NPCs that have something really important to say, and you're just like, I just don't care what you have to say. Sorry. I'm just gonna go kill the 10 boars, you know?
That's why I think I take so strongly to Elden Ring. And I'm sure plenty of people feel this way too, where I like the idea of playing an open world game that doesn't let its narrative kind of get in the way of the gameplay. And I think that's purely a preference thing, right? I don't think that speaks to quality. I just think that speaks to, man, just get out of my way. Let me get lost. Let me fight some bosses. Let me explore catacomb. Let me discover shit, right? I don't need a character talking at me every 10 minutes for me to feel like I can still be engaged in this thing. Whereas, like, I know other types of gamers, right? I know who Greg Miller is. And Greg Miller is a person that loves narrative, that wants a character to talk at him every 10 minutes and wants that kind of experience, right? And these are different types of games, and I don't think everything needs to take influence from everything else in that way, right? I would not compare Spider-Man to Witcher 3, for example. Like, both open world games, right? All these games that we're talking about are open world games, but they're extensively different genres at the same time. And so what I hope to see, right, with Elden Ring is for the games that do want to take... I hope we see more games try to take that explorative approach, because I think that is a fun way of design of open world games that we don't see as much of compared to the Ubisoft like icon map style of open world. I hope we see more of more of those emerge. I also hope we see, like, you know, more interesting takes on what, like, boss battle encounters can be like. What if I'm just, like, randomly exploring a world and, like, a boss pops up out of nowhere, right? Yeah. I'm not saying that's new to Elden Ring by any means, but I think Elden Ring does it in a very fantastic way that, you know, feels like I'll be exploring the field, run into a boss, and I'm like, man, you could have been a main boss. You could have been somebody who I would have ran through on a main path, right? Like, I love those types of experiences, the experiences that feel, you know, super designed and super like, hey, man, around any corner could be something new, and you have no idea what's going to greet you when you turn a path. I hope to see that more.
I think it's so funny to watch the audience kind of react to the way you and I have been playing these games. We've been on our streams, and the amount of times that I've seen fairly new people in the chat ask, like, is this the final boss? And it's funny because it's funny to be like, no, actually, this one's optional. Like, I don't even have to fight this boss. This is a different path that I took because I am seeking it out. And this is gigantic, and it's massive, and it's epic, and it's just this cool fucking moment, and holy shit, this is so insane. And by the way, just optional boss. Like, I didn't have to fight it. And I think that love and care, I hope the developers take more of that, of, like, the love and care approach to every single thing. Not saying that a lot of devs don't, but I just hope that a lot of those extra things don't start to just feel like, here's tacked on content, because there's nothing cooler than, I think, than going down a massively cool side quest and experiencing some really dope moments, and then understanding that none of that could have happened if you didn't seek it out as the player. Exactly. And it's those moments like that I think really resonate with me and why I love FromSoft games so much.
A few more tidbits that I want to pull about Elden Ring. These come from Benji Sales on Twitter, right? Benji Sales, he's one of those folks on Twitter that you should follow, puts out very good info about video games. At Benji Sales on Twitter is his handle. He tweeted out yesterday, Elden Ring has sold over 12 plus million units as of March 14th. It is one of the biggest RPG launches of all time. For perspective, it took Dark Souls 3, the previous selling from software game, over four years to sell 10 million copies. Then he also tweets, here's one wild stat to blow your mind tonight. Elden Ring is the fastest selling third-party game ever released from a Japanese studio. So again, extremely impressive for Elden Ring. I think it is surprising and not surprising. I think they've been building up to this. I think quality will eventually speak to sales, and I think that's what you're seeing now, right? But it is surprising in terms of, yeah, I think this is going to change things, right? I think we're going to see more people kind of lean into and ask the question of, what worked for Elden Ring? How do we make that work for us? And I'm curious to see what comes out of that. But, Andy, that'll be in the future. Do you know what else is not happening in the future, anytime soon at least? EA Play Live. This is story number two. And I was leading you into it. EA Play Live event won't be happening this year. This comes from Kat Bailey at IGN. In another blow to an already uncertain summer event season, IGN can reveal that EA will not be hosting its traditional EA Play event this year. Instead, the publishing giant will be revealing more about its projects, quote, when the time is right for each of them, end quote. An EA representative shared the following statement with IGN, quote, we love EA Play Live, as it's our way of connecting with our players and sharing what's new with all of you. However, this year, things aren't lining up to show you everything on one date. We have exciting things happening at our world-class studios, and this year we'll reveal much more about these projects when the time is right for each of them. We look forward to spending time with you throughout the year, end quote. And then a two-time EA Play host, Greg Miller, shared this statement with KFGD, quote, EA Play was a wonderful event, and I'm so sad to see that the mediocre hosting skills of WWE superstar Xavier Woods, aka Up Up Down Down's Austin Creed, led to its demise. Hopefully, EA Play will return in 2023 with a competent host, me, and everything will be back to normal, end quote.
Holy shit.
Goddamn, you know?
What an asshole. You know?
I didn't even know that was in there. I just kept reading. I didn't know that that was in the news story. I mean, that's again, Greg Miller is a man with access. Yeah. He must have snuck that in there mid-show or like just snuck it in there as I was preparing. But goddamn, Greg.
That's, those are some definite shots fired. I saw a lot of, arguing last night on Twitter where Greg was like, I even got a second chance at this, you know, and then they replaced me and immediately the show goes down. First off, like, how dare Greg, right? Going after the king, going after our commish. I don't necessarily agree with it, honestly. But, you know, you can't necessarily shit talk the shit talk. It's like, damn, Greg, that's actually... You're making points here, you know?
You did make good points. You did bring facts. I think that is the one thing. If you're going to shit talk the king, you better come correct. And Greg did bring statistics. 2 years in a row, hosted. 1 year in a row by Xavier Woods. All of a sudden, it's fucking gone.
You look at the... Yeah, I mean, like...
We were like, toss it out. We can't keep the quality.
Look at the stat sheet. It's like, yeah, this... fuck. I mean, there's... You can't really deny it. It sucks.
I don't think we need to double down on this. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't want to, Kevin. But I'm just understanding that, like, you know, maybe it's jealousy that, you know, we offered Austin Creed a 10-year deal here at Kinda Funny, and he chose G4 over us, right? Mm-hmm. Think about that.
And how long is he going to have that deal?
Exactly.
You know? How long is G4 long for?
Exactly.
Have you seen the numbers? Have you seen the Twitch numbers? Have you seen... Isn't G4 a TV channel? Is it even on TV? I don't have cable. Who has cable?
Yeah, exactly. Wow, so we're just doubling down on the shit talk for Austin Creed right now. I tried to
walk us out of this, but you held my hand and took me deeper, Andy.
You're right. I'm so sorry. Austin, we love you, man. This wasn't your
fault.
I also
love G4.
I want to do another musical sort of collaboration with you, so...
There you go. I think the interesting thing to come out of this story, right? Obviously, EA Play Live not happening. That's a big news story. But also, like, that leads me to wonder where we get certain announcements. Because, like, sports announcements, who cares, right? You know you're going to get your sports games this year. But, like, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, the next one, where could we see that? If that is to come out either end of this year or maybe next year, right? Like, does that then show up May the 4th? Does that show up, like, at a Comic-Con event, right? Like, how do we get reveals of those types of games that EA is working on that we may not even know about? I'm curious to see.
Yeah, unless this is just something that is like super delayed in a way. Like, I know they're just because they say that EA Play Live event won't be happening this year at E3. I feel like a similar type of event, not called EA Play Live, could just happen later on where maybe we get more of a direct style thing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going to get sports news. We're going to get those press release statements kind of talking about what the future of blah 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 is happening, but I think most people in our community really care about the updates on what's happening with Fallen Order 2. What else is Vince Zampella working on, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I think Barrett in chat mentioned Star Wars Celebration, which we could see it there too. But yeah, what's up with Jedi Fallen Order 2? What's up with, like, all the projects that Vince Zampella is working on, right? What is Respawn up to? Because I'm sure they're up to Star Wars, but also, like, what about the new IP that's been reported and all that stuff? I had it and then I lost it. Skate. Where's Skate? You know, do we see more Skate this year, or do we just wait till next year for Skate, right? I think there's a lot of question marks in terms of stuff that we know is happening at EA, or stuff that, like, we know their studios are busy doing something. Like, when are we going to get those? And, you know, I think it's fine to be like, cool, we're not doing our event this year. We don't have much to show, or we're not in a place to show those things because, one, game development is hard. Two, we've been in a pandemic for a couple years. Schedules don't always line up with that, especially. But then also, right, like, is there an event that's not called EA Play? Is there another way you show off these things? I think that is more so the question that I have. And I'm excited to see the answer to. Andy, before we move on to story number three, I want to let everybody out there know that they can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to DoorDash. Sometimes pulling into your driveway after a trip to the grocery store only to realize you forgot one key ingredient for dinner kind of feels like the end of the world. But with DoorDash, you can get the groceries and household essentials you need or a backup meal from your favorite local restaurant delivered in under an hour. Desperately craving a late night snack or just want to stock up for the week with DoorDash, get it all in one app. We've been using DoorDash forever. You hear us on the Kinda Funny podcast, always talking about the different taquerias we're ordering from, the different burger places we're ordering from. We are super happy and we love to just get the food delivered right to us. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code KINDAFUNNY. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code KINDAFUNNY. Don't forget, that's code KINDAFUNNY for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. Shout out to MeUndies. We've all been there trying on clothes in a dressing room and everything makes you look like three kids hiding in a coat. Finding the perfect size is annoying. That's why MeUndies makes undies, bralettes, and loungewear to fit just right. Y'all know how long I've loved MeUndies. I am often wearing the shirt, the lounge pants, the undies, the socks, like I'm doing right now. If I was a cartoon character, this would just be my outfit. It would just be all MeUndies. I love it because of the soft micromodal fabric and because it does fit really well. MeUndies knows that comfort starts with the perfect size and fit. That's why they wear test all sizes from extra small to 4XL for everything they make. They've got different cuts for different butts and everything from bold colors to fun adventurous prints, so the world can be a comfier place for every booty. MeUndies promises if you're not comfortable with any product for any reason, you can return your order for a full refund within 45 days. MeUndies has a great offer for y'all. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off and free shipping right to your door. To get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
Story number three, Private Division has announced four new publishing partnerships. This comes from Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. Take-Two Interactive publishing label Private Division has announced four new publishing agreements with independent developers. Ooh, this could be a fun one to pronounce. Die Gute Fabrik, Evening Star, Piccolo Studio.
Wow, really good.
Do you think I nailed that? That's just me guessing.
I'm assuming so. Yeah.
This is definitely a different language that I don't know.
Yeah.
Die Gute Fabrik, Evening Star, Piccolo Studio, and Yellow Brick Games' future titles will be released under the Private Division label, which has recently published games like Roll7's Ollie Ollie World and the Xbox and PlayStation versions of Hades. In a press statement, Take-Two announced that while all four developers have games in early development, quote, the first two of these titles is not expected to launch until Take-Two's financial year 2024, end quote. Evening Star, which was founded in 2018 and has offices in Los Angeles, London, and Melbourne, is known for its work on Sonic Mania Plus for Sega. Spanish developer Piccolo Studio was founded in 2015 by Alexis Corominas, Jordi Ministral, and Oriol Pujado. The developer is known for its debut title, Arise, A Simple Story. The team is currently developing a new IP. Copenhagen-based Die Gute Fabrik was founded in 2008 by Niels Denikin and is now led by CEO and creative director Hannah Nicklin. It's best known for 2019 IGF winner Mutazione. This news story is trying to kill me with the name, man. Mutazione. Finally, Canada-based Yellow Brick Games was founded by Thomas Giroux, Mike Laidlaw, Jeff Skalski, and Frederick St. Laurent B. Veterans of such franchises as Dragon Age, Assassin's Creed, and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six. The team is currently developing what it called. It's the worst because, like, I know, like, my last name isn't easy for a lot of people, right? Adioye, like, I usually have to tell people how to pronounce my name, and so I get the struggle of, like, going through it. And, like, usually I can get one name or two names in a row. When it's, like, 10 names that are, like, of different cultures, I'm like, okay, how would they say it in France? Frederick, how would they say it in German? Or, like, me trying to do all that in real time. Oh man, it's an exercise.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. You did great. You did great.
Thank you. I did my best.
Yeah.
The team is currently developing what it calls an ambitious new action RPG. And that's, again, talking about Yellow Brick Games. This is exciting. You know, like, this kind of comes back to what we've been talking about in terms of independent studio rising from either the ashes of AAA studios or people being like, I'm fed up working in AAA, let me go do my own thing. Those studios coming up and then finding opportunities to then partner up with publishers so that they have like some sort of safety net to like perform. And maybe if their games aren't like a runaway success, home run, knocked out of the park, selling 10 million copies, selling Elden Ring numbers, they don't have the fear of like, ah, shit, well, we're fucked, right? I think being under a label or being partnered with a label like this really does help in terms of smoothing out the publishing process and then giving you like a little bit of a safety net. And maybe that then leads to other relationships that you get through that label and all that stuff that's going to help out with your game. And so this is good news. Very excited for what Yellow Brick is working on, because I love me a good RPG, right? Whether it's an action RPG or Western RPG, and having folks that have worked on Dragon Age, Assassin's Creed, and Tom Clancy stuff with Ubisoft, I think it's exciting, right? Having Mike Laidlaw in there.
Yeah, especially when it's devs that are kind of who are known to have worked on single player games. I think my big worry always comes from the smaller studios the small studios that are formed from former devs on all these cool franchises that you know and love, and they say, we're going to work on a multiplayer shooter. It's like, oh, that's going to die immediately. Don't do that. Like, that always gives me the pause and the worry. But the fact that we are getting mostly studios that are working on single player type experiences, I think is always like, that's always great news. Let's get more games out there that don't feel like they need to be a live service in order to survive.
Exactly. Andy, we got a few more news stories left in the Roper Report. All these news stories have to do with Starfield. We have a Starfield roundup for you this morning. Starfield at Starfield on Twitter, or Starfield Game on Twitter. The Starfield Twitter account put up a video, like a 5-minute video of them doing basically one of their roundtables talking about their vision for Starfield and some of the concepts that they're doing for design. It is Todd Howard along with three other folks high up on the dev team breaking it down for you. Before I even get into them, Andy, did you get a chance to watch this video?
I saw like the first half of it, them describing just kind of what their vision is, and they mentioned photogrammetry, and I'm like, let's go, baby. Like, exactly. We're getting that level of detail in a Bethesda game. That's really exciting to me.
What is your level of hype for Starfield? Are you crazy excited about it?
I'm getting more and more excited for it, because again, I've always loved the concept of Bethesda games, but typically it's been, you know, here's Fallout in a world that you don't think is very attractive to want to play. And so I've generally kind of veered away from those games. I played, Kevin, there's also an MCU and preview logo just kind of hanging out up there. I like many other people, just, you know, put in 25 hours into Skyrim and then never went back to it. I feel like that's a lot of people's experiences where like, yeah, I enjoyed my time with it. I never beat it. But I'm definitely excited to see what a current day take on a open world, open universe type video game can be, and what are the limits there, and how large in scope can this possibly be. I think it's really exciting because I prefer the sci-fi genre over pretty much any other genre.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, right? Like, I'm somebody, I really do love Bethesda game studios, and specifically it is for Fallout. Like, Fallout 3 is probably one of my favorite RPGs, you know, of all time. And like, you know, Bethesda, over the last decade, I feel like it's had a few like roadblocks, right? They've had a few bumps, specifically with Fallout 76 coming out and just not hitting whatsoever, right? And like Fallout 4, I really dug, but I know people don't hail that one up as much as they would hail up a Fallout New Vegas, right? Or even Fallout 3 for a lot of people, because Fallout 4, I think for some folks, felt like more of the same, and the settlement stuff didn't hit as well for a lot of people, right? I want to see what Bethesda does with a new IP, right? I want to see what they do with a new universe. I think that is the thing that excites me the most is, hey, I like your systems. I like what you do with storytelling. I like what you do with the tone of your stories. I like what you do with factions. I like a lot of those Bethesda RPG, like the tenets they have for their games, right? Yeah. I want to see that translated to something new, and that's what Starfield is. And so, yeah, let's hop into story number four, right? Let's start off talking about 13 pieces of new Starfield concept art that they've revealed. Kevin was just pulling this up earlier. Kevin, you can pull the stuff up again as I'm going through. I'm pulling from Joe Screvels at IGN. A new Starfield developer video has revealed a ton of new concept art for the upcoming space RPG. Revealed as part of episode 2 of the Into the Starfield series, the concept art shows new locations, enemies, and more, some of which was more specifically explained by the devs themselves. During the video, we find out that some of the art represents specific locations based on Starfield's major factions. We see the sleek, sun-dappled ships and locations home to the United Colony Space Republic. There's also the home of the Freestar Collective, which offers more of a space western approach. And there's also the Ryujin Industries megacorporation's more cyberpunk-infected cities, in which you'll be able to start working for the company. As I was going through and looking at some of this concept art, I thought this stuff looked dope. Again, like, it comes back to like how they describe it as being like this NASA punk style game, and you mentioned it being this like open world, open universe style game. I want a game that feels like I am exploring a universe. And of course, like, what that means for Bethesda design, for a company that has typically done more, I guess, standard like open world, what you think of when you think of open world, right? Open map. I would imagine that this game probably falls more in line with the Mass Effect in terms of flying from planet to planet and probably having more segmented places to explore. But either way, right, I'm excited to see what they do with that, because I like that you can go to these levels and stylistically they're doing very different things that might appeal to different people.
Yeah, I think my worry, I think my immediate sort of worry and where I get sort of pessimistic with it is, it's really tough to do this in the sci-fi genre, because when you're doing this sort of thing in a mythical, you know, Skyrim-like setting, you have natural barriers there because technology isn't available to the people in that world. And what I mean by that is, if I go into this gigantic cyberpunk city, why don't I have access to fly over there? Why don't I have access to... Yeah. And a lot of that is because of scope, because we can't fucking build something that gigantic on this scale.
We can't build 18 open worlds.
Times 12, times 15, yeah. And I think that's where my worry kind of comes in, is that, like, I feel completely satiated and happy if I go to a settlement inside of a game that is based on a mythical type of Dragon Age, Skyrim type world. And here's this cool settlement, and there's a couple cool NPCs. This is great. But when we think of the future, we think of you're really just kind of held back by technology at that point. And it's like, well, I have a ship. Why can't I just fly wherever the hell I want? And that's where sort of those barriers might start to present themselves. And that's what kind of worries me with these larger games. Like, you mentioned this gigantic cyberpunk city. That sounds really awesome, and I want to explore that place. But immediately, I'm wondering, like, what are the limitations here?
Yeah, like, how big is the city? It reminds me of Outer Worlds, where Outer Worlds was another one of those games where you have a bunch of different planets you can go to. But each of them did feel relatively small, right? And, you know, I think part of that we let slide because we are like, okay, well, it's Obsidian, and they're not, like, a gigantic studio compared to Bethesda Game Studios, right? And, like, we're not necessarily coming to these games for the scope, right? We're coming to an Obsidian RPG for the writing and for the mechanics and for the systems, right? And, like, I think with Bethesda, I do kind of associate Bethesda with scope, right? I do kind of I associate them with, like, all right, push the boundaries, right? Where can I go? How free do I feel? And, you know, they've not mentioned how many areas you can go to, and they've not really talked about, like, the structure of the map really so far in Starfield. What I do hope, and this comes off of what you're talking about, right? I hope it isn't 15 different areas, 10 different areas. I hope you get, like, what, maybe 6 areas that feel like they're big, that feel like open world maps, right? I don't need it to be I'm flying to a bunch of different planets. Give me a handful of planets that then feel like their own individual open world, and I think that might get the job done.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I think at that point, that's where you start to hope that the love and care put into those 5 or 6 places outweighs the feeling of, man, why can't I just go anywhere in this sci-fi world? And that's because budgets exist, and that's because a game this big would never come out. I mean, look at Star Citizen. That's a game that's trying to do something on this level, and that game has been Star Citizen was announced the day that I got into game development in 2013, I believe, 2014, and it's still largely a proof of concept. It's still largely this thing that people try out and they have been buying into, and it's made more money than God knows what, and it's still taking forever because trying to build out a large, livable space inside of space is like, that's a tough task, you know, and it's hard to kind of make that believable. And I think that's where my worry comes into play, as opposed to a game that, you know, that is an open world, but it's set in space and it's linear. So you feel more forgiving for not being able to go anywhere, you know?
Exactly. And I don't want to lose out on that feeling. You know, we talk about special feelings in open world RPGs, and like, even when we were talking about Elden Ring during the review, the thing we referenced was the Fallout 3 opening the vault moment, right? Walking out of Vault 101 and seeing the open world, right? And we're talking about, like, for me, there's the special moments in RPGs a lot of the time are walking around and happening upon a small town or happening upon a city, right? Or like playing Elden Ring and getting to Lindale or getting to whatever location and going, oh shit, I didn't know this was here. Like, I want to know, learn more about this. I want to explore more here, right? Like, I think it's tough to have those moments when it is like these segmented, here's 10 different planets and they all are either linear or they all have like this smaller, like, no, you fly to the planet and the city is just there, right? Or you're a small segment of the city, right? Like, you know, and that is, that of course is the reality of game development. That is the reality of like, you cannot scope things to be infinite because that is impossible.
And you have to make it believable. Like, you can't go to, if you go to, if you land on an alien planet and there's this weird sort of like small settlement of NPCs, that's great. If they are believable, if they're talking to me in a believable way, all of that feels, you know, that all feels satisfying to experience. But if I go to a gigantic cyberpunk-like world, much like in Cyberpunk on PS4 or on the standard Xbox One, when that world is empty, it's like, why are there no people living here? And you start to sort of see, the walls kind of break down because of technology limitations and because of just budgetary limitations. So that's kind of like where the believability can kind of, I think it ride or dies on that sort of concept. And I hope that they can pull it out. And I'm really glad that they've had failures like Fallout 76, because this isn't a company that has made failure after failure after failure. And why should we believe in this product? This is a company that has shown that they can be great many times in the past. And then they had some stumblings and now we take those as lessons. It's like when your team is on a, when my team is on a winning streak, and I'm happy the Cowboys are doing good, and then they have one bad loss, it's like, you know what? Good. I'm glad they lost. Like, humble yourselves a bit.
Yep.
Refocus. Understand what you can improve on.
It's that magic conversation. And this is the thing I was thinking about this morning, right? Where, again, like, this is a Bethesda Game Studios right now that I think has something to prove. And it's been interesting seeing that. I feel like every major Western RPG developer has kind of had their stumbling blocks recently. You know, you've had Bioware come out and put out Mass Effect Andromeda, followed by Anthem, right? And now they want to put out a new Mass Effect and they want to put out a new Dragon Age, but it's like, all eyes on you. Like, let's see if you can get back to greatness, right? You have CD Projekt Red, who put out The Witcher 3, which many people would probably hail as one of, if not the greatest RPG of the last generation. Then they follow that up with Cyberpunk 2077, and it's like, all right, man, like, let's see where we're at with the next game, right? Do you guys still have the stuff? Now you guys have something to prove, right? You're not resting on your laurels. And you are at a Bethesda game studio right now that, yeah, is coming off of Fallout 76. And it's like, cool. Hopefully now you guys know not to rest on your laurels. And hopefully you guys now know that, again, you have something to prove. You have something that you got to bring to the table now, right? You got to knock this out of the park.
Yeah, because if Fallout 76 comes out and is mediocre, I think that I'm not looking as forward to Starfield, but the fact that it was this sort of disastrous game that has over the past couple years or so improved on itself, but the fact that it was this kind of like, wow, what a bad launch with a game that is just not what people were expecting or wanting. I'm kind of glad that happens. I'm sure they're not for their bottom line, but I think that that stumble is kind of, gives me hope for the future of the company, who has shown that they know what to do and know how to make good games in the past.
Andy, let's talk about factions. This is story number 5. Starfield lets you join multiple factions, including the bad guys. This is Matt Perslow at IGN. Bethesda has revealed in a new Starfield developer diary that its upcoming space RPG will allow you to join multiple factions, including the bad guys. As part of the diary, lead quest designer Will Shen revealed 3 of the main factions that will be available to join. Quote, one of the big choices is, quote, which part of the game world am I going to get engaged in, he said. He continues, quote, we always make a bunch of different groups that represent some of the major factions in every game. And this one, we've got the United Colonies that represent the future of Space Republic idealized. You also have the Freestar Collective, which is the space Western fantasy, people that are out there on the frontier. We've got Ryujin Industries, which represents corporate life, end quote.
Sounds real familiar.
Yeah, it does sound real familiar, right? Shen notes that he believes Ryujin Industries has, quote, one of the best starts of any factions. End quote. This storyline will apparently start with you being hired by the megacorporation and having to prove you can cut the mustard, which also sounds kind of familiar. In addition to these 3, there's also the Crimson Fleet, a pirate raiders faction that seems to be the de facto choice for anyone looking to do an evil playthrough of Starfield. All 4 sound like fascinating factions that have the potential to offer very different kinds of quests, but there's an even more interesting potential route for players to take. You can join up with the Crimson Fleet while also working with more benevolent factions. This creates sort of an undercover espionage roleplay scenario. Quote, the cool thing about Crimson Fleet is, what if you're a good person and you want to be a good player and you don't want to play as a bad guy? Asked designer director Emil Pagliarulo. Pagliarulo. There we go.
Emil.
Quote, I'm doing real bad today. I apologize.
No, you're doing great, dog. You're doing great.
Quote, you can side with the pirates or you can report back to the superiors and be the space cop type of thing. So it lets you be a good person and still play with the bad guys. End quote. Andy, how do you feel about all this? Like, factions are nothing new for Bethesda games, right? That's usually where the game's centered around, where you want to join up with the Brotherhood of Steel or you want to join up with whatever factions in Elder Scrolls, right? Like, that's something to be expected, that they've talked about how factions are going to be in this game as well. Does this something that appeal to you? Do you like the way they're talking about factions here?
Yeah, especially because we've known kind of what how that experience has worked in the past. And I think that's the... that gives me hope for whatever it is that they're going for here. And I'm glad that it's going to persist and continue throughout the game, as opposed to Cyberpunk, where you start off as the three things and it kind of all just meets at the beginning of the game anyway. Like, it kind of ends after that intro. Not necessarily, but it, you know, it kind of feels like similar playthroughs depending on how you play it, right as that intro sort of starts. So I hope that it starts to feel as well thought out. I hope every sort of faction has their own sort of, you know, guideline, and going as you go through the game, it all starts to feel like, yeah, this, I don't regret going with this because the other faction felt a lot more like real and maybe there's more missions there. The thing that they have to sort of take into account, though, and I'm sure they have, is that, like, when people play Mass Effect, I think like 95 or 96% of players went Paragon. I forget the exact stats on it, but it was like an overwhelming amount of people do not play as the bad guy. And if you do, it's maybe just like your second playthrough, if you are planning on doing a second playthrough. Yeah. But like that definitely, you have to definitely take that into account. And like, so how much love and care is being put into the negative villainous part where maybe a majority of your players won't even play that? That's something that I also start to think about when talking about what side will you lie on and what faction do you think is going to be right for you.
1,000%. And that's the thing that I think strikes a little bit of fear in me when I read the part about, like, you can side with the pirates or you can report back to your superiors and be the space cop type of thing. So it lets you be a good person and still play with the bad guys. I don't necessarily want factions that are categorized as like, this is the bad faction, the evil faction, this cop faction over here, that is the good faction. One, because I think like different people are going to take to certain the politics of the world in certain ways. And like me naturally reading through it, I'm like, well, one, like I said this during Cyberpunk, I'll say it here, right? Like, I don't fuck with the corpos. I don't fuck with the cops, right? Of the world, right? Like, I want to live in the underworld. I want to side with the people that are the downtrodden, right? And like, that is the way I want to play an RPG. I want to be able to make my own story. I want to be able to make my own choices. And so if you're telling me that, like, yeah, these certain factions are the good factions, this faction is the bad faction, you really got to sell me on what makes the bad factions the bad factions and the good factions the good factions. And, like, I just really hope it doesn't lead to the writing feeling like it is overly structured. You know, when I think of The Witcher 3, the thing that I love about the writing in The Witcher 3 is that you go on side quests as Geralt, and you get to make certain decisions where you're like, damn, both of these are bad decisions. Like, both of these are good decisions. Like, I can go either way, right? It is like, oh man, if I kill this group of orphans, then I can save the village. But if I don't save the village, like, you know, I have to XYZ thing things happen, right? Like, that is what I think makes RPG writing interesting and engaging and putting you in those situations fun. I really hope that they're able to, like, emulate that in this game.
Yeah, as long as there's decisions that aren't always binary, I think that's the most important thing, is like, each faction has got to have certain NPCs and certain storylines that are going to make you feel less favorable about them. I think that's what makes good writing good. When we talk about, like, early on in the Game of Thrones days, it's like, you hate that person, and then you get to know them, and you're like, huh, I sort of see your side. And I just hope that even the goodest of the goody two shoe factions have their fair share of shitty people that you might have to, you know, fuck over, even if it's a less favorable decision amongst the people that you're with. It's like, well, no, man, like this dude is like kind of he thinks human trafficking is okay, or, you know, like, yeah. You need to sort of run into those sort of characters in order to make it feel well thought out and kind of make it feel like you're not just going with the ultra bad of the bad or the ultra good of the good. We need a lot of gray area in between that to make it feel good.
Last news story for the day, story number 6. And Kevin, you can bring up the image for this one. Starfield has introduced its first companion character. This is Joe Screbbles at IGN. Starfield's first companion character has been revealed. Vasco is a robot who looks to be a loader droid of some kind. Revealed in a new developer video, head of Bethesda Game Studios, Todd Howard, said, quote, "No matter what story we write, the one the players get to tell themselves is the one they think about and love the most, and the companions," end quote. We then saw what seems to be an in-game shot of Vasco, a very practical-looking robot who greets viewers by saying, quote, "Hello, Captain. How may I be of assistance, end quote. And as Kev pulls up the image here, right, like, I get, like, Fallout vibes from it, right? I forget the name of the robot you befriend in Fallout 4 early on, but, like, it kind of reminds me of that, almost mixed with, like, the loader bot from Borderlands, the Telltale game that he becomes friends with, right? Like, and I like that type of shit. I'm all in for that, but Kevin, go for it.
I get that it's not supposed to be scary, but, like, for whatever reason, I can't imagine, like, when I look at it, I immediately, like, oh, it's not facing us, it's bending over in, like, a really creepy way. And I get that's not what it's designed to be like. Like, it's definitely facing us, and its knees go the other way. But it just looks so creepy to me. I don't like this.
I'm sure once you hear it talk, though, it should be fine, Kevin.
It's going to have a British accent for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I think Codsworth is who I was thinking of. Yeah, Codsworth. Thank you, chat.
100%. It's got to have a British game.
Welcome to the ship.
There it is, Kevin. You missed your calling, yeah, man.
Kevin should have been a voice actor, man. I think the one more thing to talk about with this Starfield business is that, like, still no gameplay, which to me, like, I've been seeing a lot of people complain about it and go, where the fuck is the Starfield gameplay? And I think it kind of lines up with Bethesda Game Studios, right? Like, Fallout 4 we didn't get gameplay of till the E3 before, and then we didn't see that game again until, like, when that game came out, I think. And so, like, them holding it close to the chest isn't surprising to me, and I don't think signals that the game is going to get delayed by any means. I think you wait till E3 time to see what they do with it to make that decision.
And they know what they're doing, right? Like, I think that I'm not worried by that either at all. I think that I don't think we would be seeing press releases like this if we had something to necessarily worry about. And that's not always the case for all of the games industry, but I feel like they're really confident in what they're offering here, and they're kind of going to show it when they're ready to show it. Keep in mind, we saw plenty of Cyberpunk gameplay footage, as it was being prepped to release. So, like, I'm not worried by that at all. I think we're going to have this big sort of blowout, gigantic moment. I think you need to have that big moment to sort of up the hype even more and say, like, finally, here's the gameplay reveal, as opposed to kind of giving us little hints here and there. It starts to feel a little bit less special in that way.
Exactly. Like, the Fallout 4 gameplay reveal at E3, to me, was one of the dopest gameplay reveals of all time. Where it was, like, we got the tease, I think, the week or two before E3, and then E3, it was Bethesda's E3 conference, they spent a bulk of that E3 conference just breaking down Fallout, and it felt magical the whole time. And I'm kind of down for the idea of them doing a similar thing with Starfield, right? Of them going, all right, you've been waiting for it, we now have it. Here's fucking 30 minutes of us, like, exploring the Starfield world. Okay, next time we see you, it's going to be at launch. I think the main thing I'm curious about is how this game moves, right? Is it going to look like an older, janky Bethesda games? Because I think Bethesda games tend to have kind of a stiffness to them because, again, there are these big open world action Western RPGs that have so many systems and stuff going on. I want to see if they move better. I want to see if they look smoother. I want to see if they're less buggy, right, and run better. But I think we'll get the answers to those questions around E3 season, hopefully, like, June time. And so stay tuned for that. But Andy, that E3 press conference is so far away, and it probably won't be called an E3 press conference because E3 is canceled. But Andy, if I want to come out to Mom and Grab shops today, where'd I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Paradise Killer for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, and Xbox One. Tunic is out for Xbox One, PC, and Mac. Office Management 101 is out for PC. And then Spirit of the Island is out today for PC. We got new dates for you. Sniper Elite 5 will launch globally on Thursday, May 26th, 2022 for Xbox Game Pass, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, PlayStation 4 and 5, Epic, Steam, and the Windows Store. Total War Medieval 2 is coming to mobile on April 7th. Ed Zero Zombie Uprising arrives in early access on April 4th, and then Slipstream launches this April 7th on Xbox, PlayStation 4 and 5, and on Nintendo Switch. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. And then let's see here. So I'm looking through. That's not a you're wrong. SZA, not the singer, writes in and says, Assassin's Creed Odyssey lets you select between guided mode and exploration mode. Where on guided mode, you have the map filled with icons, and on exploration mode, you have to listen to NPCs who give hints on where to go. Cool. So this is more context on like the Ubisoft comparisons, right? Like you do have the option to play without the icons if you want to in Ubisoft games. That's a good thing to point out, SZA. Love your single, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know your single, sorry.
And I think that's it. The Star Big Bad Beluga says the Star Citizen Kickstarter went live in April 2013.
That sounds about right.
Then he corrects himself and says Star Citizen was announced in late 2012 with the Kickstarter going live in October. The last update to the campaign was in April 2013 to announce further funding. So there you go. So that was a you're wrong to his own you're wrong.
And now they've made like $400 million in funding of fan backing. Yeah, they say the game is very playable, but still far from the finished product promised.
Jesus. Tomorrow's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily are TM and Tim for a Tim TM Thursday. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Greg and Mike playing some GTA Online. I'm going to hop into that probably. Kevin might hop into that. It's going to be a fun time, and you can catch that stream later if you subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, game daily.